Eileen Sarsfield and I have nothing to disclose. We actually do, but it would take all day. I also need to disclose that I am a Catholic nun, a practicing Catholic nun. And I've known Shannon for a long time. I'm not supposed to be talking, I'm supposed to be pushing these. Okay. Very good. Thank you for coming. Eileen Sarsfield and I thought we'd be talking to each other this morning, but I'm really impressed because it was early. What we're going to do is discuss what is becoming, at least for me, an obsession. And I was very, very happy to hear Denise's paper because I found kindred spirits. I think we need to ground ourselves again. Lillian Wald's dead. We need to ground ourselves again in social justice. We have to figure out how to infuse our students with these principles, because out there, it used to be in the acute care hospitals, but now it's seeping into the community health agencies. There's a phenomenon which my colleague is going to discuss called market justice. And if we don't do something to preserve the ethos of nursing, they will learn market justice. And the first question they will ask of the other is, how are you going to pay for this? That's what we're going to talk about this morning. I also need to say one thing, which is a call for help. I am going to teach very soon, in January, a course in social justice to doctoral students at Duquesne. Now that's wonderful, except I've never taught a course in social justice before. So if any of you want to help a poor nun in Pittsburgh, it's Donnelly, D-O-N-L-E-Y-R, at duq.edu. Please send me your articles and your thought, because I'm very passionate about this, but I need help. Now one of the things that my colleague outlined so beautifully, there are lots of meanings of social justice. And this is my take on what it seems to mean for public health nurses, coming from the scope and standards statement. A sense that everybody needs to have his or her basic need met, regardless of who they are, where they live, what color they are, what their religion is. We know these things. The meanings of social justice come from several traditions. One is certainly religious. And it's very interesting that some of the people that are grouped now in what is called the secular tradition have roots in religion. Very interesting. And it means a concern for the life and dignity of the person, a respect for the person. Now, before you can respect the person, you have to have concern and respect for yourself. And at least in one tradition, what is called a preferential option for the poor, which means, as Eileen and I were practicing this morning decided, if everybody gets two boxes of cereal, you take a look at the person that you know has several boy children, and you give her three boxes. It's a preferential option for the poor. In the Jewish tradition, they describe it in, I think, a very beautiful way, an obligation to heal a fractured world. In secular traditions, which we are familiar about, we hear John Rawls' notion of justice as fairness, the utilitarian insights of Jeremy Bentham and John Stuart Mill, and the social contract of John Locke. But each tradition uses the terms differently. And so the reader is sort of perplexed about what exactly does social justice mean, and then what does it imply? And if you take Rawls' notion, which is the dominant notion in the textbooks, as fairness, justice is fairness. Now, justice is about fairness. But what's fair? What's unfair? Who decides? And where do your notions of fairness come from? I mean, I may think the mother gets three boxes of cereal. You may think she gets six because you had brothers. Now, one source that we have found for our male children, one source that we have found for the delineation of social justice principles comes from the Catholic tradition. My disclaimer is I'm a Catholic nun. I also teach at a Catholic university. But it's more than this. This is neat. Now, the gentleman that came up with this, these 10 principles, happened once to be my boss. He's a Jesuit priest. His name is Bill Byron. But he took the whole 3-volume compendium of the teachings of social justice coming out of the Catholic tradition and got them down to 10 principles. And the first principle was the principle of human dignity. Respect for the human being and his or her life. They don't have to look good. They don't have to smell good. They don't have to, you know, they can be so other that you can't even describe them. But the person needs to be respected, and his or her life needs to be respected. And then I love these. The principle of association. It's good for people to get together. And any system that separates and isolates and creates silos works against the principle of association, because we're members of community, and we grow, and we nourish, and we're inspired by each other. And then there's the principle of participation. It means people have a responsibility, a duty, and a right to participate in society. My favorite, the preferential option for the poor. The principle of solidarity. We don't stand on the other side of the simulation lab. We don't stand on the other side of the computer. We don't stand on the other side of the room. We see the people who are suffering, who are in pain, who are in awful situations, women in prison. We stand with them as our brothers and sisters. And we don't take advantage of them. We are stewards of their goods, of our goods, of the environment. We recognize that there is a limit in hierarchical organizations and institutions, and that the principles of social justice in this tradition say decisions are best made where the action is. The persons most involved in what are going to be the outcomes of these decisions should be the ones that participate in making them. Why? Because we're all equal. And because there's a notion of the principle of the common good. If I am mean and selfish and jealous, I may hurt the people who are affected by my behavior, but I also hurt myself. I become less a person. Now, nursing doesn't use association, participation, solidarity, but it talks about respect and caring and compassion, concern for the well-being of others, and a concern for the poor and the vulnerable. But you see, and this has been mentioned before, when we get to nursing social policy statements, which we have our students at least look at or read, we see that the documents represent some confusion about what exactly social justice is. In the standards and scope of practice, it's mentioned as a standard for action and policy. Recent policy statements link social justice to our engagement in public policy. But all of the statements about social justice from the nursing community, with the exception of the public health documents, talk about individuals rather than populations. And it's only the public health scope and standards that talk about the common good. Interestingly, the American Association of Deans of Colleges in Nursing talk about social justice as competencies in two of their curricula. And I have no idea what happened to the PhD and the master's, but it's in the BSN and the DNP curriculum. But again, there's this lack of clarity. Beecham, long time ago, said that the ethical foundation of public health is social justice. Now, if that's true, we should be teaching that to our students. But we get all mixed up with this utilitarian notion, which has been mentioned before, the greatest good for the greatest number of people. But what about the vulnerable? Because often, which has been said so beautifully this morning, often the most vulnerable, the most disenfranchised, are sort of isolated out there. They're expressed or seen as the other. And they lack a presence or a voice in the public square. We always say nurses aren't at the policy table. There are a lot of people who aren't at the policy table. But one of my colleagues said, you know, nurses aren't at the policy table in healthcare, but they're certainly on the menu. And you know, that's very, very true for vulnerable people. They may not be there, but dear God, are they on the menu. I'm going to welcome now my colleague, Eileen Sarsfield, who is going to point out to us as she gets up here how important it is that we have a framework with which to challenge what's going on out there, which is euphemistically called market justice. Thank you.
Isn't she a tough act to follow, huh? I should have went first. I knew it. I should have went first. Overriding this whole problem of ambiguity, which Sister Rosemary and our colleagues talked about, is the predominant fact, as you all know, that the market system in the United States is the market system. I mean, the health system is the market system. And compounding that is the fact that it's a flawed system. I am sorry. Okay. Compounding that is that this whole market justice system is flawed. If you look at the principles of supply and demand, and you look at our market justice system, let's compare them. First of all, with our supply and demand, the true supply and demand economic principle, there should be no monopolies, right? Do we have monopolies? Right, integrated health systems all over the country. How about take a look at the very true market system? Do we have a free choice when we buy shoes? Can we go to Saks, or we can go to Lord & Taylor's, or we can go to the discount? Yeah, we have a total free market, you know, there. But what do we have with healthcare? Do we get to choose freely our insurance policies? No. So right there, compounding the fact that we have this market justice system is the fact that it's flawed. Now, what we all have, as you know, is that nurses right now, all the healthcare workers, are dealing in an environment that is always highly regulated, always driven by reimbursement, and mostly concerned with liability problems. Then what happened is market justice inserted itself into the public health world through the strange marriage of MCOs and health departments. I say strange because while there are benefits to both partners, certainly the privatization of public health increased the market share for MCOs. And at the same time, the very efficient approach of the MCOs improved access for most of our vulnerable populations. The MCOs and the health departments had enormously different missions. There is no doubt about it. They were in direct conflict with each other. So what do we do? Let's talk about some strategies. How do we begin to reinvest and push the social justice agenda? Fraser tells us that there are two key components to investing in social justice. First, the recognition. We all have to get on the same page. What does really social justice mean? So that's the first piece of what Fraser says. The second piece is a little bit harder. It's the distribution. This means that decisions about health care and how it's distributed are transparent, participatory, and public. And when these components are violated, that's when we have social injustice. So let's talk about a really very recent example. You all know that one of the provisions in our health care reform is that when you're 26, you can stay on your parents', you know, health care bill, you know, your insurance. Well, what do you think happened with TRICARE? You know, TRICARE now was excluded. These beneficiaries who are children of armed services are not included in this 26th age. Whatever it was 21 or 22, that's when they're cut off, 22, yeah. So they weren't at the table. They weren't even on the menu. So it happened because it wasn't participatory. So that's just one example. Now, I'm sure if we went deeper into healthcare reform, there are many other examples where there wasn't participation, where it wasn't transparent. And that's where social justice is violated. Now, another way to think about strategies to reinvest in social justice is at a micro level and at a macro level. First, at the micro level, can we make sure that the public health nursing actions are comprehensive and that they're fair? And then at the macro level, again, talking about policy and regulatory, that they really are attending to vulnerable populations. We've all talked about Lillian Wald. And as you know, at the turn of the 20th century, she worked at these two levels, didn't she, when you think about it? She did that basic action level. She was in the tenements. She was delivering very focused care to the poor. She also worked at the higher policy level. She changed laws. She did tremendous, really, impact on the immigrant population. However, I could argue that we're living in a very different world than Lillian lived in. She was able to, because it was very simple then, to impact these immigrant populations We, however, now are living in a very complex world, and we live in complex times, and I do wonder sometimes, what would Lillian do now? I don't know if she'd be as successful, but maybe she would. So in this more challenging environment that we live in, how are we going to do action steps for nursing? We should certainly include, first, introducing and teaching the concept of social justice in the academic and practice settings. And more importantly, we have to then link that to why we are practicing. For example, the practice of prenatal teaching should be enveloped within the context of social justice, since it positively impacts the infant mortality rates and health disparities, again, pushing back on social injustice. So really, when we teach, we have to teach within the social justice context. That's the challenge to academics. It became really obvious more and more over the years, after the partnership, the marriage was formed between the MCOs and public health agencies, that MCOs had very little experience with vulnerable populations. So public health nurses need to begin to introduce the idea of social justice to have, as Zahn said, bubble up from the roots level. History has shown us that most of the revolutionary ideas have come from the bottom to gone up. Think about when women got voting rights. Did it come from top down? Oh no. It really, really bubbled up from the women in upstate New York City. So we have to think about that as an approach to really push the agenda of social justice. One of the problems with market justice is that there's nothing to challenge it. We need to figure out, for example, a distribution mechanism like Fraser talked about that challenges the market system and is really based on fairness and people's needs, not on the economic model of supply and demands. So for example, can we think more about clinics that are open 24 hours? And not just like the little doc in a box where, you know, you can really go anytime, but you need to have health insurance. So in summary, the market-driven health system is here to stay. It is entrenched in our work, and that we are very challenged right now to begin a dialogue about social justice, focusing on first common definitions and developing creative strategies that will bubble up into our practice, into our education, into policy levels. Thank you.
We can entertain questions and comments. Yes.
I have a disclosure to make. I'm a UWC grad, so two of the panelists actually were my faculty in my nursing program and my master's program. Anyways, I just wanted to say about teaching in nursing, I chose to pursue a doctoral degree in nursing several years ago, and I was admitted to a prestigious university, and I received a pre-doc award, and I quit. And it was obvious that I was going to be an exclusionary other from there on out. And in talking to some of my colleagues in that program, I found that some of them had sought justice to the point of hiring lawyers in that particular program. And in talking to other doctoral nursing students from different parts of the country, I understand that this is not a unique experience that I've had. So I've chosen to pursue a degree in public health for a doctoral degree. But I just want to say, how do we get this conversation started in schools of nursing? I think if we're trying to teach social justice, the conversation needs to begin at home. So would any of you like to comment?
Well, I actually would like to comment on that because my presentation, which was about language, I think it's very important. I was at a presentation yesterday, and I asked the question, would it help if we put the word social justice in the job description for public health nurses who were looking at their wage compression as well as no job descriptions. It was a wonderfully, beautifully done HRSA grant by two nurses in our midst who've done wonderful work. But the use of language, we cannot underestimate the use of language and how we frame what it is we are about to do, because it's very easy, as Sister Rosemary said, to believe in justice. It's very easy to have courage if everybody's on the same side as you are, but to truly have courage is to stand, as Denise said, as counterpoint, to be, as what Mary talks about, the other, where can you be uncomfortable? Like in the face of someone who used some of the philosophers and principles to ground his position, yet he has gone on a rampage of shooting policemen and doing violence. How do we frame in a very clear way for ourselves and for our students, but really clearly in the language and in taking a stand on it like you did, of saying, I will not do this. I won't stay in something for which that is difficult.
Yes, I think it's going to take a really long time. I mean, when you think back, Sister and I were talking about evidence-based practice. I mean, now everybody's talking about it, right? But how about 10 years ago, 15 years ago? So it took a really long time for that concept, which you could say was not controversial, if you want to say social justice is controversial, took that long, you know, for that to embed itself in academia. So I think we just, again, have to bubble up. We have to keep talking about it, we have to keep writing about it. And the other thing I think among faculty there seems to be sometimes the resistance to embrace a new idea, because it's, okay, we've already done evidence-based practice. We've talked about informatics. Okay, now we have to do cultural sensitivity. Okay, now social justice. You know? So I think the more we just keep talking about it and have it bubble up, I think it's going to happen. I'm going to be older.
I'd just like to say something. I've been around the block a couple of times. student, faculty, et cetera, both roles. I will honestly say this. I think if you have within you advocacy genes, you have to realize that if you stand up to an establishment or an institution, you could get hurt. And you have to be prepared for that. I also think, and I've never read this, that that's part of what it means in the social justice principles about association. It's easier to do it if you're part of a group. It is so much easier, and this is bad language, to shoot down one person or to destroy one person. But I also believe, and this is maybe an optimistic narrative, I also believe that if you live long enough, justice prevails. That doesn't help you. Because most people that manage organizations don't want trouble. And the first effort is to close the door or turn down and to blame the victim, to blame the person that's being hurt. And do we have injustice in our schools and universities? Yes, absolutely. You take them on, you have to be sure that you have the resources. And I just don't mean the money to hire lawyers. I mean the human personal resources to do that. And I think anybody who's done it once or twice, you pick your enemies carefully. Because you know, your battles carefully. Because you know what that is. But it's a shame that we're doing that to each other. It's a shame.
In the blue.
Oh, sorry, I couldn't see. Anybody else in the blue?
Nope. You're it.
I've been using social justice as my framework for community health nursing for about a decade. And one thing I always experience with that is I teach in the state of Montana, is the rolled eyeballs, liberal media bias, and all that. So I especially want to say thank you. And I'm somewhat of a pagan, but I want to say thank you for the change some of the rolling eyeballs when I start talking about social justice and having students at the our rescue mission for their clinical. And if there's any other suggestions about how to deal with that little, you know, kickback that I'm sure we all get, I'd really like to hear anything else. Thanks.
Okay, local 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, gentlemen. Yes.
Why is it that social justice as a concept is controversial? I mean, we have this incredible, all our religious traditions, like all of them, have this component of preferring those less than us. And so we should. And if 90% of Americans or something like that believe in God or believe in some kind of concept of a religious tradition, we should have this incredible common understanding. So, but it is really controversial.
Well, I think, I think it's controversial. What I see in my students is it goes back to that myth of meritocracy. It's very hard for me to dislodge that from people because this notion of if I just work hard enough. And so social justice says maybe you give more to that. It's not equal distribution. People are really, really, my students at least, really uncomfortable with any sort of, you're not going to get three more boxes because, by gosh, we each are equally deserving of that. And so that's what I see in the students that I see is that sort of, because you're talking about redistribution of resources, and that kind of lifts people. So.
Okay. Wait, way in the back of the room.
I want to ask this question. Why is such a social justice so controversial? Why is it not something that we all understand? Because all of our religions teach that. The reason is because we've been so long in a mentality of selfishness and narcissism. And what they've been using for the last three decades is fear-mongering and dividing and conquering people. In other words, distinct and separated people, and fear that, as someone said on the presentation, that it might help you. If you do good, it might take from you.
And I also think that, the United States, we are democracy, right? We're supposed to pull ourselves up by our bootstraps. That's what I get from students. I get some of that. Well, if you work hard enough, they should be able to do that. So I think that's the other piece that's controversial.
Okay, in the back of the room. Gregory article. So she asked about this idea of Cohen and Gregory about using non-nurse preceptors. My guess is AACN, and they're not going to like that, right? But their perspective was that non-nurse preceptors, because they were in the world, had a wider view, could see how food and nutrition and housing fits in. I don't think a specific discipline matters. I think nurses could do it if their framework is wide. So let me give you an example. So you go look food insecurity, and you go look in the nursing journals. Is there any interventions authored by a nurse on food insecurity? No, because I think part of it is the journals are turning them down because they're saying it's what? Not nursing. So if we as a profession, and so this is not public health so much, but if we as a profession can't see that it's more than giving shots or giving immunizations or that, can't see that if you're not nutritious, right, you can't think and brain development, all that, then that's limiting. So I think nurse preceptors are fine if they see that wider picture. My worry is that their worry from there, and I agree with them, is that if your preceptors are just so narrowly focused and roll their eyeballs at social justice if you bring it up, then they're not doing you any service. So I think it's okay. Yeah. Sure. Your second question.
Basically, the idea of the clinics, this goes back to our work in Washington, D.C. When we began to educate men and women to work with vulnerable populations and place them in non-traditional settings to provide care, and we thought that this would be very possible. And we found out, now this could be different because I've been gone almost 2 years, a year and a half. all the clinics were open from 9 to 5 or 8 to 4, and they all went on to be on weekends. Now, what I know about people that work and are paid by the hour, they can't. There's no comp time. You can't even make a phone call sometimes, let alone take yourself to the to a health center. And I was just crazy about that. I think that increasingly people are going to seek care where they can get it. Now, I'm very excited about the fact that you can get immunizations in supermarkets and drugstores and Sam's Clubs. I wish there was some way that people who couldn't pay for it could also be immunized. I think the parish nurse movement is a wonderful grassroots movement that reminds the churches that they have some responsibility. And I'm going to use my church as an example. It's more than sacramental. My church has the sacraments. That you have to be sure that the people in your church are eating, that they have some help with raising children, my God. I mean, it takes more than a village, it takes a universe. the numbers of people that have older people at home, the shut-ins, the isolated people living on the top of the hills in Pittsburgh, and there are bunches of them, that somehow or other they're not forgotten. And this requires time, commitment, energy, support. And it has to be more than a good work. It has to be something that becomes part of your world. The problem is some of the churches pay the parish nurses, and some of the churches, my own, accept volunteer work. And so we have to talk about the social justice too. Well, I mean, how much generosity can you expect from someone who's just trying to support a family? Mm-hmm.
And, yes.
When we had another presentation the other night, I was one of the facilitators, and our group was determined that social justice was integrated into public health nursing. And they felt that we weren't in a young group, and I was the oldest of the bunch. But it was something that you learn as you grow up. You learn it in your church, you learn it in your school, you learn it in your family. So I think this is if the distribution of resources is so painful for our current students, there's something wrong that's already gone wrong that we need to do this. And I also would like to remind people of the IOM back in 2001, the aims of acute care, one of the things is patient-centered. So don't give your care when it's convenient for you. It's got to be for the patients, and then public health is population-centered. So we have to rethink how we're doing things.
Mm-hmm.
But
thank you.
Maybe we better start with that in the family and teaching the right principles. Ethics that we teach, justice is one of the ethical principles.
Mm-hmm. I think the fourth row here first, and then back there. Okay.
I just wanted to say thank you. It was an excellent presentation by everyone. You had Dr. Donnelly ask about how to teach one of those social justice classes, and I taught one at school.
Send me an email, please.
For nursing students and in my church, I'm currently teaching out of a book by Dr.
Here
at the conference, and it's an excellent book to use. But
thank you.
I also just wanted to thank you for discussion of, and I think it might have been Dr. Canales who talked about the use of non-compliance, and it's one of my most hated nursing diagnoses. Thank you for bringing that up. And then the last comment I wanted to make was that I think when we talk about what kind of interventions we can do, what I think about is making up a new word, and I've come up with coal intervention or facilitco intervention, where we collaborate, advocate, and facilitate with the community population instead of doing to.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Okay, yes.
Conversation for gentlemen with our hard-headed students and our capacities. practitioner and an educator, is that our job is to take those urban myths and actually examine them and have the students examine them. Because once they start to examine them, you know, they'll come out and say, this is true, and I say, okay, go find the data on it. And then, if, you know, it's kind of like someone would say to me, well, you don't want the government doing healthcare. And I go, well, what is the most efficient system out there administratively right now? It's Medicare. It's 11% overhead where everybody else is 35. So if they go and look at it, it's an urban myth that has been propagated. So I think we have to do something about that propaganda. Other thing I want to say to my fellow nurses, because I'm a practitioner, people go into public health nursing because it's 8 to 5. Now, we've done some things with that in my area. We're working more weekends and more evenings and flexing hours. But we have to be there when the public is there. And it's not always convenient. So nursing is going to change some of the things that they've come to just enjoy about what they do and be and take that passion and put it into practice. That's one of the things I want to say. The other thing I'm going to say that's going to be hard, institutions do move slowly. They don't take change readily, although they yap about leadership. They have all these leadership courses that everyone avoids and everybody manages. And I'm going to say that yeah, you're going to get your lumps, but the only way we're going to change those institutions is for people to stand up and say this is not right. It's as simple as saying, to me, social justice comes out in one simple phrase. This just isn't right. Okay? And people have a sense of value about it. That's fine.
Thank you. We have room for one more question in the green sweater. Am I missing something? All of our speakers, and they are here to talk with you individually. I also want to thank everyone who attended. Your insights have been made it a rich discussion.